Well, the Australians are getting rescued left and right. We're going to talk about Australia on today's podcast. That's coming up.
This is The Hot Zone. Engaging with the news in a whole new way, international war correspondent Chuck Holton brings insight into areas of crisis and lets you help those affected.
Hi, folks. Chuck Holton here. Welcome to the Hot Zone podcast. It's getting to be summertime here in Panama. They go by kind of the South American calendar, even though we're not in South America. So the kids are getting ready to get out on summer break. The rain has stopped for the most part, and it's getting to be windy, which, you know, that's what we get. We here in Panama, it's either kind of rainy or breezy, and rarely both. But that's okay. We're having quite a bit of colder weather. Actually, it got down to like 70 degrees the other day because of the big winter storm that's happening up north. I know you all up north feel really sorry for me having to endure this 70 degree weather. But I wanted to talk about a place where they don't get near as much rain. One of the things I really like about Panama is that we have lots and lots of water. Well, in Australia, it's also summertime and it's very, very hot. And so the consequences there of taking a wrong turn could be pretty serious. Now, over the last few weeks, they had a trio of people who were driving into the outback of Australia. I don't know where they were going, but they took a wrong turn, ended up stuck in a riverbed, and couldn't get their car out. They spent about three days with their dog and the three of them, two ladies and one man, just waiting, hoping somebody would come by to save them, and nobody did. And so apparently they didn't know which way to go, and so they split up. I can see a bunch of bad ideas happening all at once here. But bottom line is, one guy went one way, one lady went another way, and one lady kind of stayed around the car. 2 weeks went by before they found the lady with a search party who had stayed around the car. They found her first, and that was after 12 days in the outback. And here's an interview with her, what she had to say about her ordeal.
It took us 2 or 3 days to move from there once we ran out of supplies. And just through looking for shelter, because where we got bogged, there was no trees or anything. We tried several times, many times to try and get out, but I just couldn't get out. And so we just ventured forth to try and find some shelter and some water. And we did. We found a cow water hole. But it is what it is, and you've got to do what you've got to do. And we had to drink from that, which is why. And then we moved up a little bit further, which had a lot more trees. So we had a bit more shelter because it was getting really hot. And it had a salt water hole there as well. We couldn't drink from that, but at least we could get cool for when it was really hot during the day and it was freezing at night time. There's like about 6 litres of normal water. And so that's what sustained us in the beginning. During the day, it's just really hot. So then we dug ourselves under the car during the day into the sand where it was a lot cooler. And at night, because it was a lot cooler, we could sleep in the car. Three of us, my partner and a friend, were going off to do a bit of fall driving over to Chambers Pillar. And I took a wrong turn, basically, and ended up being bogged. And, yeah, experienced something I wouldn't want to experience again. When the helicopter found me, I thought that Claire and Sue had reached the highway. That was my, you know, immediate thought. Yeah. So to find that out, it's not the case, is, yeah, worrying. I'm thankful for the, you know, the cow waterhole. I really am. And they, because of that, they were able to carry 6 or 7 litres. So at least they've had something to sustain them in the meanwhile, a little bit. And I guess, too, I want to make sure, too, that I say thank you to everybody and anybody that's been involved all the way from our friends and loved ones, family, to the station owners and workers and stewards well, and everyone.
It's quite a diverse terrain. There's sandy dunes, there's hard clay, there's areas of dense trees, but there's also rocks and ranges in the area as well. So it's quite a diverse terrain and challenging terrain to look. The information I had was they have very limited food. They had a packet of biscuits and some beef noodles between them, and that, you know, didn't last them very long.
Now, the very next day, fortunately for the guy, they found him. He was found by a rancher. He had gone and found a fence and then decided to follow the fence with the idea that the fence had to lead to civilization sooner or later. And he's just very fortunate he went the direction he did, because apparently if he'd gone the other direction on the fence, he would have gone forever out there. I mean, some of those fences must go for hundreds of miles. It's unbelievable just how vast some of that desert is. But his name was Phu Tran. He was found at a watering hole by a rancher. Here's what the rancher had to say about that.
I was talking to a person last night, and she was telling me, had I heard that there are three missing people in this area, and I hadn't heard, so, and I thought, well, this morning I'll go out and have a look in this area and see if I see any tracks or anything. And yeah, well, as soon as I come here, I seen the tracks and just followed them in here. Yeah, I just rang the police and told him that I'd found him, and yeah, and then it sort of went from there. Yeah.
Made him a sandwich?
Yeah, made him a sandwich and he drank two cans of Coke, and yeah, he was pretty happy to be back there, I think. Yeah, like, you know, he's just so lucky he come into here. Like, he could have went anywhere and you wouldn't have got water for another 20 Ks. I think he sort of got to the stage where he was a bit, yeah, he didn't know where he was and what was happening. So, you know, I was trying to find out where the woman was, and, you know, the only thing I could find out is where he come from with his tracks. And looks like they'd sort of done nearly a circle, and like he'd spent one night here and probably one night back along our boundary fence somewhere. And like the other couple of nights, I don't know, he would have been out in the sand hill somewhere.
Mm.
Mm.
He has advised us to pastoralists that he had located water along the way. They got to the boundary fence, and at that stage he was still with Claire Hockridge. He had decided that he was going to continue and to follow the fence line to until he found the station or more water. And he'd left her there. He continued to walk along that it took him about 2 days, and he approached the pastoralist today, and first thing he did was went to the tank and got some water. He's in a good condition. He was slightly disorientated, the pastoralist said, but other than that, he was in good condition. He had a drink of water. The pastoralist has then taken him back to the homestead and given him a feed, and he's able to talk and in good spirits.
So they're 2 for 3 on this group of people that went missing. The third, the lady that split up and went looking for help, has not been found as of this podcast being made. So I guess you can pray for her. I would really pray that she's found. It's amazing how long somebody can actually go without food and water. They say you can only go 3 days without water. That's not true. There have been instances where people have gone 2 weeks without water. And so let's just pray that this lady finds some water at least and eventually gets found alive. Now, those two people got rescued from the outback of Australia, but there was another Australian that recently got released and saved from 3 years being gone, and he wasn't lost. He had been kidnapped in Afghanistan. He was kidnapped alongside one of his co-workers. They were both college professors in Afghanistan, in Kabul. They were kidnapped at gunpoint 3 years ago, and they were finally released as a part of a pretty complex prisoner exchange that took place. And I just want to show you a little bit about what that was like for him. Here's a recording that this Australian guy made after he'd only been a prisoner for like 9 or 10 months. It's pretty chilling.
Please speak, I ask you, my family, mother, father, brothers and sisters. I ask you, speak for me now. Speak to the American government and please, please help secure my release so that we can go free from this place. I ask you this in God's name. Please help us. Please help us. My mother, I know you are sick in hospital. I know that I may never see you again, but I ask, Dad, please, I want to come home. Please speak to the American government. Justine and John, I ask you, please, to talk to these people.
Man, that just sends chills up my spine because I've been walking around Kabul, Afghanistan by myself, as you know, not long ago. And that's the kind of thing that, boy, if somebody had time to organize something, they could really grab you very quickly. You know, one of the ways that I try to keep safe when I'm in a place like that is making sure that nobody has time to plan anything as far as kidnapping me, because it does take a little bit of time to figure out how they're going to grab you. So I try to get in the middle of their OODA loop, so to speak. That's observe, orient, decide, and act. I try to get in there and disrupt that by not letting them know I'm coming. I go walking by in the marketplace and they go, oh, hey, we should have kidnapped that guy. But they don't have time to actually do it. So here's what this Australian guy had to say after he was released.
After almost 1,200 days, our ordeal ended as abruptly as it had begun, and a Black Hawk helicopter lifted me from the parched soils of Afghanistan. Firstly, I would like to take this opportunity to thank all those who worked on the long and complex process that led to our final release. As a result of this exchange, the peace talks between America, the Taliban, and finally, the Afghan government have resumed again. This brings great joy to me. And obviously, those who have suffered needlessly throughout the 20 years of violence, I pray that they will be successful and that they may enable the return of stability and security to the country of Afghanistan and the region. The time that I spent as a hostage with the Taliban has had a profound and unimaginable effect on me. I struggle to find words to express just how completely this has changed me. At times I felt as if my death was imminent and that I would never return to see those that I loved again. But by the will of God, I am here. I am alive and I am safe and I am free. There is nothing else in the world that I need.
I was in this weird world of not quite knowing. You know, you heard he was out, but it wasn't quite real until he was there at the airport, and I just gave him a massive hug. It was just incredible to see him and to be able to do that.
So I guess that's kind of a joyful podcast for today. We got some good news, at least for in 3 out of 4 cases. Let's hope that that last lady gets found. In the meantime, we got more good stuff for you coming up this week. We're going to talk about Haiti tomorrow, because there's always stuff burning up in Haiti. For the time being, thanks for watching, and we'll see you back again on The Hot Zone.
The Hot Zone is produced by Amy Holton and Livefire Media. Copyright 2019.